From the Marquee Media Studio inside Mark Tank, it's the Mark Haney Show.
Winning. What does winning look like to you? Well, in entrepreneurship, it... Well, actually, we're going to get a little taste of that today. This is the Mark Haney Show on a mission to ignite the entrepreneurial revolution right here in the hometown we love. And we do that by building the Backyard Advantage, the most connected community in the world for local entrepreneurs. It's based around this culture of love, helping one another, helping your fellow entrepreneur in town. And part of that for our show is sharing stories of winning. And I'm here with a young man who has... As I begin to learn a little bit about his story, I'm like, if that's not winning, I don't know what winning is. I am here with Ivan Katrenyak. He is Chief Executive Officer of MCAT Construction and ADU, their ADU builders. But he's also leading a community in other ways with his church and beyond. So we're going to get to know his story. And so welcome to the show, Ivan. Appreciate you coming on.
Of course. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, you betcha. So maybe, if you don't mind, just give us a little bit of your background. Tell us a little bit about the business. Tell us a little bit about the other things you're working on, if you don't mind.
Yeah, of course. I've had a passion for business and I guess growing, starting, building things from a young age. Growing up in the church also... Just at a young age, got radically encountered by the Lord, and that changed my life forever. And I wanted to bring those two together to, you know, build God's kingdom. And you can do that many different ways. That doesn't just look like church. Mm-hmm. But along with that, we planted a church 4 years ago, and we started a ministry called United Revival, where we do a lot of these massive outreach events. Our last one in Houston had over 10,000 people gather. Wow. And it's just big prayer marches that happen all over the U.S. But along with that, we built a business that fuels these events. And I think the passion to build business is to be able to do those things. And so that's what really gives us our drive. And so, yeah, we started a company. I started in construction from a very young age. Paid my tuition, failed, mm-hmm. went in debt, and then built out of that. And we started a company called MCAT Homes or MCAT mm-hmm. Construction in 2020 with the focus on being the best ADU builder in California and beyond.
Could I ask you a question back to something you said a little bit earlier? You said you were radically challenged,
radically saved.
Saved. What happened? What was there something that was there an event?
Yes, I guess you could say it was an event. I grew up in church my whole life. My parents are amazing. I have a great dad. He's probably one of my greatest mentors to this day. And great family. Yeah, so like I said, I grew up in church, good family. Everything looked like it was well from the outside. But about 15 years old, I started just feeling very empty, very depressed. I didn't know what my purpose was. I didn't know what was the point of life. I wasn't in drugs or anything like that. As every young kid, you did stupid things, but I just didn't know what the point of living was. And I started getting very suicidal, very empty, very just this feeling kind of came over me. And like I said, I grew up in church, but I never had an encounter with Jesus in my personal life. And I was in my room and it was about 12 o'clock at night. I was sitting there and I said, God, if you're real, show up in my life. I don't want to live the rest of my life feeling this way. I said, I heard about you. I prayed to you, but if you're real, change my life. And I just said those words. And the moment that happened, the Lord changed my life and showed up in my life and encountered me in that room. And so from that moment on, I said, I want to live the rest of my life for the Lord. And that's what happened there in that moment in that room. And it was a radical encounter with Jesus. The Lord showed up in my room. And so I decided to commit the rest of my life to Jesus from that very moment on.
Obviously your faith was strengthened and turned on in a very important way, but did your life turn at that stage? Is that when you got your act together in some way?
Yeah. From that moment on, I was like, if God is real, I want to live the rest of my life for him. And so I became very passionate about ministry, very passionate about other people experiencing God the way I did. and very passionate about. We started a house prayer ministry, and we started doing downtown in Sacramento. We started gathering with a small group doing just worship, like, and evangelism.
Where did you do it? Like, on the, I saw in your bio, street ministry.
Yep, we what just is gathered. That? So we gathered with 15, 20 people with the guitar. We just got in downtown and just worshiped and prayed.
Outside,
yeah. Like at the Doco in downtown, at the Old Sacramento. Oh, wow. Yeah, we did that for 2.5 years almost every Sunday.
And people would kind of just join you. They'd walk by and hang out.
Would come up and start to listen. And at one point, I remember we had a crowd of about like 150 people just stopping and listening to the word. And it wasn't this like, you know, there's like a turn or burn kind of message you see, all, you know, there's a lot of these, you know, soapbox preachers in downtown, but it was just, we just worshiped. And when people gathered, we just told them our testimony. Hey, I'm 20 years old. I'm out here. But God changed my life and this is what I'm doing.
Wow.
And that people saw that, and there was a lot of impact through
okay,
that.
Okay. So you just had an event in Houston with 10,000 people. And I know you do other, it's beyond that, but did you know where it was? Did you like have a vision of where it was going to go, or you just decided to just kind of start a grassroots thing because it felt right to you at the moment and see where it goes?
If someone told me 5 years ago that I'd be standing at a Jesus march in Houston with 10,000 people, I'd probably laugh at you. So I had no idea where this was going.
How old are you now?
I'm 28.
Okay, so this is amazing to me because when I think about, you know, I started the show off thinking about the topic of winning and, you know, these different points in our life where we sort of like take stock of how things are going. And, you know, I'm more than twice as old as you. I'm 62, I'll be 63. And there's like these different times in your life when you're, reflecting.
Right.
Now you're reflecting. Does what you do today, because we haven't even got into your business yet or even deep into the what you've done, but at 28, you've done some amazing things. We met at a recent luncheon, and the people around the table had a lot of respect for you. It was amazing to me. And these are, you know, high level business people in the Sacramento community. And they all said, that's the guy that you need to know. You need to know that guy. And I'm like, oh, wow. Yeah. I've seen his billboards up. I knew of the company at some level, but I didn't know you. And then you're 28. I mean, that's got to feel like winning.
It does feel like winning. Yeah. I feel older than I am, but I look at my age and I'm like, wow. I'm really proud of I think what God did in my life and what I was able to accomplish over these past few years. But I think that's what happens when you just give it all, you know, and you fully commit yourself. I always say this, the best thing you can do is be fully obedient to God. And he'll expedite your life faster than you could even think. And if you get, you know, you give God an inch, he'll take you on a mile. And you just got to give as much as you can. And so I think that's a big reason. I'm also very stubborn. So when I commit to something, I like to say God turned my stubbornness into steadfastness. Because stubborn is being stuck in your way. Steadfast is being stuck in his way. And so I'm still very stubborn, but what God wants me to do, so I don't give up easy.
I always find that the most successful people, they're the people that can commit. Because a lot of people can start things, but very few people have this uncommon follow-through and uncommon commitment. But it's those people who stick with it, because it's not easy. They stick with something. I mean, the ball moves. I mean, it might not move in exactly the direction you thought it was going to, but it will continue to move, and then you just kind of course correct.
Yeah. I mean, even for our we have a ministry called United Revival. We do these big Jesus marches all over the U.S. The first one we did was here in downtown Sacramento. 250 people gathered for the very first one, and we did another one, and we just felt the Lord saying, just keep going. We went to Seattle. We did one in Seattle. It was like 400 people gather. Fast forward a few years later, we did last year nine of these events. Every event was like 6,000 people plus.
Wow.
What
happens in an event? I mean, obviously there's music, there's a lot of community and friendship building, and worshiping and...
Yeah, I mean, the way it kind of started is, I don't know if you remember in 2020, there was a lot of things going on, a lot of protests, rallies. They had all these different marches in the streets, and it was kind of chaotic. I'm flying back from Florida with a friend of mine, and I was like, listen, look at all these marches, look at all these things going. Why don't we go march through the streets, but just worship and pray and just bring peace. And why don't we just do
Instead
that?
Instead of dividing, let's unite.
So the first one we did was in Sacramento, and we get to downtown, and apparently a few blocks down, there was another protest going on, a rally. It was getting chaotic and hectic. And we had a crowd of about 200 people gathering. And we're walking down the street and praying, and people think that this is another protest rally, or they're, you know, ready to loot, do all these kind of things. And they walk up and they hear worship. And all of a sudden, people begin to gather that were at these other events that were like, it was a, you know, it wasn't a good thing. They started to come to what we were doing. And you could see these people with anger and upset and hurt coming up. And then all of a sudden they start to cry. They started to tear up. They started worship. It was just awesome to see. And we're like, we need to keep doing this. And that's kind of how it all started.
I mean, it makes us so much more happy when we're, I mean, if we can, if you're around a bunch of people that are angry, I mean, it's infectious. And the opposite is true as well.
Yeah. So, I mean, these Jesus, the goal of the Jesus March, it's just to rally up believers in a city to just be the light, to share the good news. And so there's a kind of a big worship gathering in the beginning. And then there's a physical Jesus March that happens that goes throughout the city. So we actually close off the streets and we march through the city. It's about a 1 mile
loop.
Okay, so
you're gathering up believers. This is interesting to me that you're gathering up believers, because I go to church and there's a pretty big emphasis on the conversion, if you will, right? You got a lot of believers in the church, but then there's a lot of talk about like recruit. It's like kind of like recruitment. Yeah. Let's call it that. How much of it is sort of recruitment versus gathering up the people that already believe?
So what we do is we when we put on a Jesus March, most people come into a Jesus March as somebody who's already a Christian.
Okay.
And so we have a very strategic way of how we kind of coordinate and organize, how we run our marketing, how we reach people, how we mobilize. And so everyone who signs up for the event, they're not required to be. We have a lot of ads that go out. People sign up and they put their information in there. And we shoot out then these blast text messages, and on our social media has, I think, about 200,000 followers. We use that as well. And so we shoot out these messages saying, hey, if you're coming, bring a friend who doesn't know Jesus. And so a lot of these people who are Christian that show up to the event bring people with them who don't know Jesus. And so we do an altar call. Hey, if you want to give your life to Jesus at these events, every single event we do one. The one in Houston had over 1,000 people come forward. Wow. We have baptism tanks out there if you're ready to get baptized. We had 3 baptism tanks. Baptism was going on for about an hour and a half. With 3 tanks, just one after another, hundreds of people got baptized.
Is there a, at these events, is there a specific message that you're trying to, I guess, convey? Or is it just fun?
Yeah, there is a very specific message. Number one is, if you don't believe in Jesus, if your life hasn't been changed by the love of God, today there's an open invitation to have real transformation. Number two, once that happens, it's the "Here I am, God, send me" message. So it's give your life to Jesus, and then "Here I am, God, send me." And so we call everyone there. Hey, you're here. You're created with a purpose. There's a scripture in Jeremiah says that in your mother's womb, God formed you and He destined you. And I want to know what I'm destined for. And I want to encourage and invite other people to find out the destiny that God has on their lives. And so it's that call to action. It's "Here I am, God, send me."
Okay. So how has this Christian build movement, how is that intersected with the business? You're a major ADU builder. We haven't got into this, which is totally abnormal for our show. I'm just infatuated by the, you know, what about your passion for this and how young you are and what you've built while simultaneously building this very, very successful business. Talk to me about that intersection between those two. Do they align? How do they align?
Yeah, they align. I mean, they don't align in the sense that they're interconnected and there's collaboration. Obviously, some people from the ministry and the church, they work for us at the company. But they align in the way that they're both building the same thing. They're building the kingdom of God. You know,
you talk about that at work.
Yes.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I mean, everyone knows I'm a pastor.
You got a bunch of construction guys, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
They all know I'm a pastor, you know? And I tell them, I was like, whether it's in the church or here, I like to build people. I want to see people grow and develop. That's one of my favorite things to do, is see people develop and grow. And so
you're the senior pastor at what church?
United Church.
United Church. That's in Sacramento?
Yeah.
Okay.
In Sacramento.
Okay.
So United Church is the church, and then United Revival is like the ministry arm of the church that does all these events.
Okay. Okay. Just making sure I have we hadn't mentioned the name yet, I don't think, so I want to make sure that was clear. But okay, so then MCAT is your business, and you build these small houses that,
additional ADUs. Dwelling units, ADUs. Yeah, so they're not like connected in the sense that there's collaboration, but we use the business to fuel the growth of the ministry, the church. We're right now fundraising for a new building, and so we're ready to commit whatever funds are necessary for that. I think I have the greatest joy in being able to write a check for $200,000.
Oh, you make some money in your building, selling some homes, and you give part of it to the ministry.
Yep, as much as I can. That's the joy in it. The more I give, the more I get back.
So cool. All right, let's talk about the business. I'm really curious about this. I do a little dabbling in real estate investment, and I've got a few properties with multiple houses. Could be called ADUs. I didn't build them out as ADUs, but like two houses on one property. I have to imagine maybe just a little overview of what that market looks like today. I know that it's grown over the last several years, but maybe what's caused it to grow. And then tell me about your business growth.
Yeah, I mean, in 2020, California comes out with these blanket laws allowing pretty much they made every single family home open for multifamily. So you can build an ADU on every single family home across California. This was already allowed, like granny flats or in-law quarters, but they just made it available for every home. It was no longer restricted by specific zoning, and they made it way easier, more accessible, and faster. So that's pretty much what happened in 2020. So you can build a lot more of these ADUs. And ADUs pretty much all it means, the acronym stands for additional dwelling unit, but all it is a secondary home on your property. And so when these laws came out, I think there was a two-part kind of the laws came out. And so there was a lot of businesses that stepped into it. People started seeing that, hey, I can do this on my property. It filled the need for retirement. It filled the need for rental income, bringing family together. And people started building these ADUs, and then companies like ourselves started coming up in this niche market, and we started heavily marketing, spending thousands of dollars a month. And I think that also drove a ton of demand because we created exposure to the product. Mm-hmm. 4 years ago, no one really knew what an ADU was. Mm-hmm. But right now it's the buzz, and a lot of people are talking about it. And so that's kind of what happened. And so the market grew a ton. And I think why the market's so strong for it is because it solves a problem in a really unique and really effective way. Number one, it builds generational wealth. When you build an ADU in your backyard, you're not losing money. You're gaining value at least dollar for dollar. Number two, you bring family together. You don't have to send parents to a retirement home. You can bring them together. It's cheaper than a retirement home. A mortgage on an ADU is less than the retirement home, even if you provide assisted care living at home. And you also have a great source of rental income. Mm-hmm. That you can create. There's a huge real estate potential, especially if you're, let's say you have a home, you have some equity in your home and you want to get into real estate. One of the best things you can do is go build an ADU in your backyard. If you have space, separate the space and lease it out. I mean, we build 600 square foot ADUs that rent for $2,200 a month.
Yeah. $2,200 a month, that's in California, that's affordable, right? And it seems to me that that's another problem that you're solving. Is, I mean, you can't turn on anything on the news or turn on social media without people talking about the affordability issues, inflation and so on. And so what are we going to do? And housing is a huge component of our monthly expenses. And if you can get into a product that is got a reasonable payment and is more affordable, then you can maybe build that bridge to maybe a full-sized home or whatever might be your long-term plan.
Yeah, of course. And what we see a lot of people doing is parents, they're already more established in life. Their kids are growing up. They're coming out of college. They don't have the best job yet. They don't have nowhere to move. They don't have nowhere to live. And what they do is parents build an ADU for their children. The kids move into the back. They're staying at space and they're building and establishing their life until they're ready to actually afford something like that. And so it's a great bridge. It really fills that gap to where, there's generational wealth being built on that property. Mom and dad have their kids there, but at the same time, they have an investment property. Maybe they're paying rent on that unit, but for less than they paid somewhere else, you know? So there, it really does bridge that gap, but it's a great way to create a lot more housing really fast.
I have to imagine the opposite is true at some level. I feel like I've seen this before where parents are aging. They want to age in a home without moving into a retirement home. And maybe they move into the ADU because mm-hmm. they're downsizing, they're scaling back, they're getting rid of all their crap because they're in the fourth quarter of their life. And hey, let's help the kids out. And you know, the kids move in, and now you've got somebody to kind of make sure you're all right as you age.
Yep. Yeah, that's a huge part. I'd say a big chunk of our business is parents selling their main home. They've been in a home it's 3,000 square feet, just the two of them. They don't need it. Oh. They're selling that home. They have a ton of equity. They move in to their kid's backyard by building an ADU, or vice versa. The kids sell the home, move into the parents' home and build an ADU in the back.
Yeah.
We see that happen all the time. And it's at least 65% of everything we do is this right here.
Wow. Wow. And you mentioned this at the beginning is the unity that happens, the family unity that happens when you've got your kids close by. I live in an ADU. We have three houses and a clubhouse. It's a family compound. We call it Haneyville because it kind of looks like a town. And so my two kids and all my grandkids live out in Haneyville, and we take care of each other. I mean, we have the group text. We have, you know, the coyotes out. We're sending a text, hey, it's coyotes mating season, and we're letting everybody know, keep the dogs in the house, because I guess it's a time where dogs get attacked and stuff. So these daily communications about how to keep each other safe, I mean, I can't tell you how many times my daughter-in-law's, you know, texted my wife and said, hey, do you guys have any milk? You know, I just need something real quick, you know. So we're helping, and then we do the same thing for them. So it's, for anybody who's thinking about the ADU thing, I can tell you, you know, as long as we don't kill each other, it's a really special thing. It's a really interesting opportunity. So I can vouch for the fact that it can be really special.
Yeah, I mean, our slogan at MCAT Homes is MCAT Homes Building Together. That's what we say. It, you know, the mission is building together. That's the vision of the company, is bringing family together. You know, you can bring family together, but still maintain independence.
All right, let's talk about the product. You said 600 square foot. Are they all, is it sort of a, are there choices of like floor plans, or is it, they're all the same? How does that work?
Yeah, you can build a small, I mean, California law allows you to go as small as, I think, like 180 square feet. I wouldn't recommend building that small, because 180 and 300 will cost you the same. If you have a bathroom and a kitchen, it's still the same work. So we build
600 square feet. That's like 30 by 20 type thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we build as small as 300, and the largest you can build on average is 1,200 square feet. Certain jurisdictions allow you to go slightly bigger.
Okay. But you have to have a bathroom. Do you have to have a kitchen?
Yeah, you have to have a bathroom. You have to have a kitchenette. It doesn't have to be a full kitchen, but it has to have a kitchenette. And it needs to have a washer and dryer hookups. Does it mean you have to have a washer and dryer installed? We built a pool house for this one client, and she needed a washer and dryer hookups in the wall in the unit. But she's like, I don't need a washer and dryer. There's a pool house. And so she just covered it up with a cabinet.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as long as there's access to it, you open the cabinet doors, you see it. So, but those things are requirements, are required to have it be considered an ADU. It needs to be livable, because that's what it is. It's an additional living unit. And so we need to make it livable for it to qualify as an ADU, which is that what you want. You don't want to just build an office. You're going to spend thousands of dollars and it has no value to your property. But when it's considered an ADU, when it's classified that way, it increases your property value by a ton, because now your property is considered multifamily. It's no longer like a single family home, which is a liability, but there's another unit. You have rental income. Your ADU can pay your mortgage.
Yeah, so 1,200 square feet. You could do multiple bedrooms in 1,200 square feet. You probably do a three-bedroom. Would that be the max, or could you do a two-bedroom?
Three-bedroom. We have a C, I believe it's called a C2 model on our website, where it's a three-bed, two-bath, 1,200 square feet. It's pretty much like a small house.
Yeah.
You can definitely make it fit. And we're a design, like a custom build company. We have these models. We have about 15 different ADU models you can choose from. And it's to give customers a base. You know, this is what I can build off of, give you an idea of what you could do. But every backyard is different. And so we build them to fit, you know, we want to create a tailored solution to fit your needs.
So maybe, you know, this is not supposed to be like an infomercial, but I'm really am curious about like how much it costs. Cause I dabble a little bit in real estate. So if somebody wanted to build a base model as a rental, right? You're not going to go extravagant. You're probably going to go base model if it's just going to be a rental. How much per square foot is it?
It's hard to say per square foot cost because a 400 square foot ADU and an 800 square foot per square foot are completely different. Because every property is so much different.
Yeah.
The utility hookups, all of that can change drastically from home to home. I'd say on average, let's say 600 square foot ADU in a Sacramento region, and it changes because we have an office also in the Bay Area. In a Sacramento region, you're about $175,000 to build a 600.
Okay, so you're getting it for $300 a foot type thing.
Roughly, yeah. If you go bigger, the cost per square foot slightly decreases.
Comes down a little bit. Yeah. And that includes it doesn't include the washer and dryer, but it includes the oven and the shower.
Yeah, it's a turnkey solution. Mm-hmm. It's A to Z. We take care of your design process. We submit your permits. We deal with the building department. And then once your permit is issued, we build your ADU. Our team takes care of the whole process A to Z, except for some of the key decisions with design and what you want it to look and feel like. Outside of that, the customer really doesn't have to be involved at all. We take care of it all. And so it's ready to move in once you're ready, once you get the permit passed.
So I built my houses it was a project. I learned a little bit about what construction was. And PG&E was just a pain in the butt my power hooked up. I mean, it's like, look, it's Placer County. There were issues over lot line adjustments and all kinds of BS easements and stuff like that. So there was a lot of jumping through hoops, but they weren't the worst. It was PG&E. And, you know, hey, for whatever reason, those guys, you probably don't want to badmouth them because you're going to go out and build more houses. But like, are they the worst?
Yeah, we have very mixed feelings about PG&E. They are sometimes, you know, things go really well, and other times it's a headache. Some of the biggest delays we've experienced are utility holds. PG&E is the longest.
They've got great employees. This is nothing wrong with PG&E and the people that come out and do the stuff. They seem solid. It's the bureaucracy for getting things off of one desk and onto the next that I assume these are project management type people. They just do not move the ball.
I have friends that work in PG&E.
Still blaming stuff on COVID today.
Yeah, no, it's true. I have friends that work in PG&E, and I was like, hey, how can we move this along? He says, Ivan, if I do an ADU in my backyard, it's going to take me the same amount of time. He's like, I can't even move things up the line because I work at the company.
Do you typically tap into like the panel of the existing house, or do they have to get a whole new panel and all that kind of stuff?
If the unit's under 800 square feet, we can usually use the existing panel if it's at least 200 amps to power the ADU. We can use that amount of amperage. It is enough for something that's 800 and under. If it goes over that, you want to upgrade your main panel in your home. But we would tap into the existing panel, and then from there, we'd create a sub panel on the ADU.
Is solar part of what you have to do?
Yeah. Now, because of the new laws that came out just in 2026, pretty much the Title 24, the energy efficiency rating that you're supposed to meet for the homes you build, pretty much the way they structured it is almost every single home. Now, every ADU is required to have solar panels.
So, so we talked about the permitting and all that stuff. That's turnkey. You handle all those.
We take care
of it
all.
And you build enough of those where it's kind of just part of your process.
Yeah, we have a really, really amazing team. We really refined our process and our team over this past year, especially last year. We really built up our team. My brother Vitaly, who's he helped me grow the business. He's our CEO. He has this saying, you know, you take a complex process, you compartmentalize it, and then you streamline it. Mm. And we apply that to a lot of what we do, because permitting is not easy. Doing it over hundreds of permits a year gets a lot more complicated, and making sure that your customers are taken care of. And so, yeah, we really just put a ton of time and invested a lot of money into refining our process. We want to be as fast as we can. And so we actually, last year, we cut our production down in half.
Oh, wow. Yeah. That's great. So that's
in one quarter.
that is amazing to have that kind of process improvement. And so you said you had a lot of meetings. It's January when we're recording the show. You had a lot of meetings. I assume some of these are around setting the goals for the, or whatever, the plans for this year. Do you expect process improvement this year as well? Is that part of the plan?
Yeah. I mean, in the past, we kind of focused, it was process, product, people. Now for us this year, it's very people, product, process. Uh-huh. We've developed our process. It's pretty strong. You're fine tuning it as you move along. But really right now it's building out the people, really developing our team, implementing a lot more training. And that's what we're really focused on this year. But yeah, we're just setting, you know, what's the pathway to this year's success? What are the goals? Where do we want to be that? Where do we want to be? And then we backwards engineer it. That's what we do a lot.
Okay. Do you sub out? I assume you sub some of the build out.
Yeah, the way we work at here at MCAT is all of the customer communication, everything pertaining to the customer is all in-house.
Okay.
So we could provide a great customer experience. Construction is not known for its customer experience. Amazing, you know, construction, customer experience really don't go hand in hand. And so at MCAT, we said we want to create a very customer first centered experience when it comes to these ADUs. And so all the project managers, all the permit coordinators, drafters, designers, that's all in-house. The actual field labor itself, except for a few techs and some of the cleanup guys, everything's subcontractors. I realize there's a lot of people who can build it better than me, who know how to install tile better than me, who can do all these other items better than me. And it's, I'd rather just hire someone who's exceptional at their specific trade. I used to have over 25 just field crews employees, and I was breathing down people's neck, managing people and not managing projects. And so we do everything subcontractors, and then we have amazing project managers that work with all of our different vendors. We have up to 90 different vendors we work with.
Who's your best subcontractor?
We have a few. We have a few really good ones.
Because there's some that'll just save your bacon, right? You're a good customer, and so you're bringing them steady business.
Yeah, I mean, some of our plumbers, we've been working with them for 7 years.
Okay.
Some of these guys has just been, they're just steady. They continue mm-hmm. to move forward. Our suppliers are great. Some of our framing subcontractors, some of our concrete subs. We have a lot of different subcontractors we work with, but then we kind of prioritize work to 2 to 3. Our HVAC guys are killer. They're really good at what they do. And we have 2 different subs for all of our HVAC, and they always make sure everything's taken care of.
I have to imagine, too, in building an ADU, it's different than building, let's say, a new home that's maybe part of KB Home Development, right? Where you can just come in production. You're in somebody's backyard. You've got their kids, dogs, that kind of stuff. So there's a certain customer service aspect of being on somebody else's property. Like, don't, you know, be polite. Don't leave your crap around. All that kind of stuff's got to be mm-hmm. extremely, or I'll say more important, because the homeowner's more sensitive because they're home.
Yeah, no, of course. I mean, this year we're going to build and complete a little under 200 ADUs. And, wow. We're very much like a production builder. Our internal process and our systems are very similar. But a production builder is building 100 homes on a couple of blocks. We're building hundreds of homes on hundreds of different backyards. Mm-hmm. And the logistics of that get very complicated very quickly. And so to do it right, you really have to... It takes a lot to make that happen. And so you have all these different customers, different people you're working with, you're dealing with. And if you don't have it dialed in, you can quickly, you can really get knocked out really easily. And so what you're saying is really true. The logistics of making sure everything's going smoothly. Mm-hmm. And we're not perfect 100% of the time. We're always improving and growing. But I'd say, you know, we have a pretty good success rate so far.
Which of the, and not just with your company, but in the construction industry, which of the trades are in shortest supply?
It's a good question. It's kind of hard to say. I'd say if you have a lot of work, people will want to be on your bid list.
Okay.
So we don't really have a short of supply.
There's been times when it's been tough to get electricians. I know that. And certain others are maybe slightly difficult, and then some of the others are maybe, you know,
it's very
easy.
Relational. If you have a good relationship, I mean, if you're providing them work, they're always leaning on you.
Okay.
You know, and so I would say where it gets a little more complicated is you're expanding, you're growing into new areas. Like when we went into the Bay Area and we didn't want to just be a Sacramento company that builds out there. We actually launched a physical location. We have an office out there, teams that live and work in the Bay. And just building out these relationships takes time. But once you have a good relationship with a subcontractor, you provide him work, you're not going to really run into that issue. But I would say some of the subs where you want like good subs that you always want to find, and it's hard to sometimes find these good subs. Some of the finish guys, finish work is extremely important. Cabinetry, flooring, millwork, the ones who know how to do it well. Solar subcontractors, there's a lot of them, but there's a lot of them who suck as well. And especially your two big ones is framers and foundation. And framers, you know, once you start working with them, they get used to you, their quality starts to go down. And so you really got to check them and like, hey, you got to make sure things are really dialed in because they're focused on building it and building it quick. But I would say, we haven't really experienced that recently. In the beginning, there were some trades that were of short supply. But man, if you're providing them thousands of dollars of work a month, when you call, they pick up.
I wondered about it changing with, obviously there's been a crackdown on illegal migration. How much has that cut into the
workforce.
supply of people to work?
Yeah, it's a good question. We haven't really felt that too much.
Okay.
I do hear stories of different things happening. We haven't really seen that really across some of our teams. I haven't really felt that. We haven't had ICE show up to any of our projects and do a raid or anything like that. And so for us so far, it's been pretty good. Yeah. I think overall, there's always going to be difficulty finding good people because good people are always busy with somebody. And so you want to find those good subs. You want to build a good relationship with them. We want to have good prices, low prices, but also have good subs. And you're always kind of balancing that out to where we're not paying as much as you typically would, but we're giving you a ton of volume, right? Mm-hmm. And so that's how we kind of work with a lot of these guys. Like, hey, we're going to give you the security of you're going to be busy with us 80% of the year. All of the work you do can come just from our company.
So you mentioned people first this year. Obviously, you've had to have people as a high priority this whole time. You mentioned your brother, and I met him. He's a COO. Maybe give me a little bit of a understanding of the number of employees and maybe how does he run it all and you sell? How does that work?
Yeah, he focused specifically on the ops of the company.
Okay. Making sure stuff gets built.
Yep. Wherever there's inefficiencies. I mean, we work really hand in hand together wherever it needs to happen, and we divert our attention where necessary. But his main goal is making sure whatever process we develop and implement, he ensures that it's moving forward, it's efficient, and things are moving forward very well. Vitaly's very... he's very metric centered. He'll pull up the spreadsheets, builds out formulas, tracks everything. I mean, he's so good at that. The company wouldn't exist without him.
Okay, so his name is Vitaly.
Vitaly, yeah.
And you're Ivan. What have you guys, did you guys grow up? Obviously, you've been here a long time, but were you born here in the United States?
I was not. I was actually born in Ukraine. My parents moved here when I was 2 years old. Vitaly was born here.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah,
so. Because I can detect a very, very slight accent with you. Does he have that? And did you get that from your parents? Or do you even know you have it? Or maybe
sometimes,
I don't mean this to be offensive. I'm more like,
no.
I detect a
people
little bit.
People tell me that sometimes. Yeah. And because I go back and forth. I speak pretty fluently in Ukrainian and Russian.
Oh, okay. And so just speaking that language automatically lends itself to speaking English a certain way.
Yeah.
Okay.
Your accent slightly changes. Vitaly doesn't speak it as well. He does speak Ukrainian and Russian, but not as well. So I don't think he has as much of an accent as I do.
I've asked other people from Ukraine and Russia about the war and, you know, family back home. How does that major conflict affect like you and your family? Is there any direct effect?
There is. I mean, all of my dad's family is still in Ukraine.
Oh wow!
And so they're on the west side of the country, so they're not as close to the front. But yeah, it affects people are getting drafted in. And so it does affect our family, affected my dad a lot. A lot of my mom's family is still out there. Both of my grandmas and grandpas are still out there. And so
I've heard that it can be like brothers fighting brothers. I'm thinking back the, you know, the our civil war that we had here. It's like the conflict is like the people here, the Russians. I mean, I don't, this is a question. I'm framing this as a question because I've talked to other people that have sort of said, look, we're not against Russia, we're not against Ukraine or anything like that. It's more like, you know, you almost feel bad that you're having to fight your fellow brother because, you know, it's a lot of people are related to each other back there that are actually fighting one another. Is that true? Or
to a certain extent, because there's a lot of Ukrainians that marry people who are Russian and back and forth. They're similar cultures, but also different. There is a difference in the language. So if a lot of Russian-speaking people will not understand Ukrainian, but a lot of Ukrainians will understand Russian. There is kind of that breakdown there, but yeah, you have a lot of people who are intermixed and you do have that. So it is a very interesting conflict. They are different countries and backgrounds are different, but they're also are very similar, you know? And so it is a very, you know, there's families that are kind of in conflict because of that. You know, the husband's maybe born from Russia and he married a Ukrainian wife. And then those families know how does that look like at their home? Because maybe her side of the family is like, hey, we're, you know, Russia's bad. They invaded Ukraine. And he's like, well, and then you have all this kind of, and so I've seen it. I've seen it with certain people, even our church, and we you know.
You've seen division here, at least discussion.
Discussion, a little bit of, there is some tension and things like that. And I mean, war never helps anybody.
Yeah.
It's always a bad thing.
I'm sorry to hear that it is affecting your community in that way where division can start, I guess, because you guys are uniters. You guys are bringing people together. It's like you hate to see any division over something that you have no control over. None of us have any control over what's going on.
Yeah, it is very unfortunate what's happening. Yeah.
Well, thanks for being transparent about that. And are your parents? How old are your parents?
In their early 60s.
Early 60s. So they've got to be just, I mean, torn apart because they have people back there that are having to like that are physically afraid.
Yeah, no, my dad. It's my dad took it very, very difficult. It was really hard on him. The whole war and everything going on, and he's still, you know, everything happening. You know, there's thousands. I mean, there's conflicts happening all over the world, but there's been hundreds and thousands of people that have already passed away. This is the largest conflict and consumed the most amount of people in the last 5 years. I get there's stuff happening with, you know, Israel, Gaza, there's other areas right now in Iran, but there's thousands of people dying on a regular daily basis. I think there's over 300,000 so far soldiers that have died from this conflict.
My gosh. Well, I don't want to take it on a down mode because hopefully, and you know, pray to God, we get a resolution, some end. So let's brighten it up a little bit. You've been married 3 years, no kids. You're good at putting good people around you. You're good at, because you mentioned your wife was really creative and driven and just got all kinds of attributes, and you decided not to have kids for, you're so disciplined, you decided not to have kids for 3 years. My wife was pregnant within like a month after we got married. That's pretty amazing. Both of you agreed to that, right?
Yeah, we actually prayed and we said, you know, it was within a month of our marriage. And we're like,
we're Catholic, like, though. We have a bunch of kids. The Catholics start popping out the kids.
Oh, I mean, I have six siblings, five siblings. You know, my parents have six kids. And so we come from a very big family. We prayed and we said, hey, let's go separately pray and then we'll come together and we'll give a number of what we think we should wait. And we both said 3 years and we're like, oh, okay. So we'll just wait 3 years. And it was good. We got to really deepen the foundation of our marriage.
So the 3 years is up now.
It's up
now. Time to have some kids. Your parents are probably saying, come on, dude.
Yeah, my dad brings one of my nephews. He's like, you see this? You want one? He's like, it's really nice. You should get one.
I love it. Okay. Just the last question. Maybe just think about our audience a little bit. Some of them will be business people, maybe some investors, you know, leaders of Sacramento, maybe a few others beyond that. But maybe words of wisdom. If you provided a real world story of your journey, which is very intriguing and very inspiring because you're winning and we all want to know how to win or be more successful in our life. Maybe just a few thoughts on words of wisdom for the rest of us so that we can, we aspire to do great things too.
Yeah. No, of course. I mean, for me, like I said, I'm very fate driven in everything that I do. I don't believe you have to sacrifice ministry on the altar of a successful company. We built an amazing business. We're by permit volume, we're the biggest ADU builder in the state. And so I don't think you have to break those two apart. I've seen that happen. And so I always say the best businesses are built on two things, a good idea and a good strategy. If you have the idea, but you don't have the strategy, how do you implement? If you have a good strategy, but you don't have an idea, what you implement sucks, it's not going to work. And the best ideas and the best strategies come from the Lord. The Bible says in Deuteronomy 8:18, it says, remember the Lord your God, for he alone gives you the power to produce wealth. And so the ability to build wealth, not just get finances, but build wealth comes from the Lord. And he gives you the idea and the best strategy. I have a lot of good advisors, businessmen in my life who give me a lot of strategy, but the best ideas and the best strategy, the breakthrough strategies all came in prayer. There's another scripture that I love. It's Proverbs 3:5. It says, lean not on your own understanding, trust the Lord in all your ways and he will establish your path. And so there's been many instances where we didn't know what to do. We didn't know how to break through, especially last year. We had so much growth that happened in our company. We've been experiencing, 100% year over year growth over these past 4 years. Last year, our company grew by over 45% in our sales. We closed out the year with $50 million in sales. And we had this surge of growth. And we hit this glass ceiling at this one point of like, how do we break through? How do we build out the team? And I didn't know what to do. I was frustrated. And I came to the office late at night and I prayed. And I prayed and I prayed and I prayed till I felt something break through. And the next 3 months, we cut our production in half from quarter two to quarter three. And all of our executives, they're like, this is a miracle. I was like, I know it is. And so that's what I always say is you build with the Lord. He's going to give you the ideas, the direction, the strategy. And it may not always make sense. There wasn't something we specifically did that changed things. Obviously, there's a lot of things that we implemented. The other thing I would say after that is you can't build a successful company on your own. You have to have good people around you. You have to build people around you. And if you're going to be very self-centered, you're not going to be able to grow. You got to build people. Some of the reason we have a lot of success in our company, some of the people that are a part of it have been growing in it from the very, very beginning. Some of the people we brought in certain positions came from doing something completely different. But, we saw the potential in them and that produced a lot of growth. And so those are big things for me. At the end of the day, everything you do, you have to build correctly, build a good foundation, and build with the Lord. And I've seen the most amount of blessing in that. And we're just getting started. There's different business ideas I have. I want to grow into different industries. The Lord challenged me last year, for me building a company that's going to break into the millions was like, well, this is crazy. But then it became normal. And then I started dreaming in the 100 millions. And we're on track within the next 2 years to do over 100 million in sales. And beginning of last year, the Lord challenged me. He says, Ivan, dream bigger. And I was like, God, I don't know. I'm dreaming kind of big. He's like, dream bigger. He's like, your dreams, you know how to get there. You have a step-by-step process. You've developed the plan. You know how to get there. He's like, you have to dream so big that the only way there is God. And I started dreaming in the billions. And so I want to grow a company that's going to be generating revenue in the billions. And I believe by the grace of God, we'll get there one day.
Very inspiring. Very inspiring. 28 years old. Build with great people. Build with the Lord. Wow. Very impressive. This is why we started our show. This is to share these kind of stories. So yeah. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. It was great being here. You bet. Appreciate it.
And to all you out there fighting the good fight for entrepreneurship and for the backyard advantage. And of course, all of you out there fighting the good fight for our freedom, our security, and our way of life. Here at the Haney Biz, the Mark Haney Show, and the Growth Factory, we're never above you. We're never below you. Always by your side.
This segment includes the personal knowledge, experiences, and opinions about angel investing by seasoned angel investors. This content is for informational purposes only and should not be considered as legal, tax, investment, or financial advice. Nothing in the segment constitutes a solicitation, recommendation, or endorsement.